Welcome back to the Sunday Puncher podcast. I have Jason and Simon with me here, and I've also got the Steelers and Denver game going on right now in the background. So we're going to first start off talking about Deontay Wilder's win over Arthur Spielka. Now, Simon, I just wanted to ask you first, you put some money on Spielka. What did you see going into this fight that had you feel confident enough to throw some money down on Arthur Spielka?
Well, firstly, I saw 8-1 and thought that if I can get eight times my money back on that, then I had Wilder at about 60% likelihood of victory. And I thought with that in mind, 8-1 was very appetizing.
And Jason, if you were Simon's friend and really cared about him and how he spent his money, what would you have said to him before the fight?
I would have said, take the bet. I thought Spielka had a good chance. Maybe not take the bet, but Spielka had a good chance at making it 12 and giving Wilder a really hard fight, which he did up until a certain point. So I don't know that I would have maybe told him to take the bet because I didn't think Spielka would win, but I definitely thought Spielka would make the fight significantly harder than people expected.
Which he did, because if you watch the fight, Spielka should have been up on the cards at the time of the stoppage or the knockout, which he wasn't. And I don't know if we should get into that. I mean, maybe we should. What were the judges seeing in that fight that had them think that Arthur Spielka was losing that fight? And by a wide margin on a couple of the cards. I had Spielka
One of the few times that I really disagreed with Steve Farhood, who's Showtime's unofficial scorer.
I think he usually
hands in really decent scorecards. By that I mean scorecards that I agree with. So me and him have a tendency to score the same way. But in this fight, I couldn't believe he was going the same direction as the judges, which was unfortunate. I guess the only thing that you could say maybe the judges were seeing just the lengthiness of Wilder and him trying to like keep Spielka off him, but he wasn't really being very effective doing that most of the time, but he still was landing punches.
There were rounds where it seemed like he was off balance, hardly landing anything, taking shots for his trouble, and then still getting the round on various judges' cards, and it didn't really add up.
If I look at seeing how I can justify Wilder getting a lot of those rounds, the only thing I can think of was that Wilder did seem to land the bigger punches in the round. Like, there were plenty of times where if you looked at whose head was snapping back in the round, it was Spielka's. Now, it wasn't often, but it was Spielka. And I think maybe that's what they were looking at. I mean, I don't know.
And that could steal him a few rounds, like two. But he wasn't landing with enough consistency in every round.
Right.
Where was this fight fought? Was it on the West Coast?
It was in Barclays.
It was on Barclays.
Right. So East Coast, obviously, for people not so good with geography. And what's your point you want to make about that? Do you have some conspiracy theory?
No, I was just wondering.
Okay.
It doesn't fit into my theory.
What do you guys think, though, about Wilder's performance?
It's the exact performance I expected to see.
Yeah. It's par for the course. It's a not quite prospect, maybe like a contender-level performance. You know, he managed to end the fight in a devastating manner, but he was getting beat for the majority of that fight.
I probably want to like preface it because I get a rap as being like a hater on Wilder, and before I talk about like his fight element, I think he seems like a really warm and genuine individual. I like him, the man, and I think that his fights are usually entertaining. It's usually worth tuning in. So I like him as an entertainment commodity, and I like him as a human, or what, you know, the human side that he displays to the audience. The bit I don't like is obviously how, you know, babied he's been by the industry. He's been, you know, coddled a bit to have a belt that he doesn't necessarily have a claim to. And I think that what we're seeing is the limits in how far he can go starting to be, you know, pushed to the surface where you see, oh, he isn't handling a southpaw very well, or, oh, he's struggling to keep his balance where he's trying to counter hit. And you just see these problems coming out. And, you know, you're inclined to believe, and I think that you wouldn't be in small company when you think that someone is going to be able to get the better of him, and there's a fairly big list of people who would be able to pull it off.
I think what came to the surface, and what you're pointing to, Simon, but you didn't actually say, is that the flaws we're seeing with Wilder can be explained by the fact that he kind of came late to boxing. He doesn't think in boxing. He's just doing boxing. You know, it's really different when you think in boxing. You're just, everything you see in the ring is natural for a guy. You look at Floyd Mayweather. He's completely natural in everything that he does. And obviously, you know, Floyd's just the easiest example, because that's a kid that we know we've seen from a very early age, and he's actually one of the best.
It's where everything's muscle memory, it's instinctual. His brain doesn't have to parse what's happening and then think of a response. It's just all, you know, intuitive on a physical level. His muscles know what they're doing before his brain does.
And that's where intelligence can be the asset that takes you over and above where you could be, because, you know, Mayweather's IQ allowed him to do things that no fighter in recent memory has been able to do. But in Wilder's case, he's athletic as hell. There's no doubt about that. But what's missing there is this instinctual action, I guess, to take in every situation that he gets himself in, and he's got to think about stuff. And we're starting to see that when he gets in there with guys like Spilka, who are much better than, you know, just the guys that he'd been fighting recently, Wilder's going to struggle. And to his credit, though, he pulled it off.
That was a
contender, easily a contender for knockout of the year. We'll be talking about this in about 11 months, this same knockout.
Yeah, because this wasn't someone who'd come to pick up a paycheck. This was a live dog who had, you know, a very good argument to be in the ring.
Jason, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, the only thing that I really wanted to add, you guys made a lot of great points, is that Wilder is kind of looking like a fighter who's just waiting to slip on that banana peel, right? It's just a matter of time.
Literally, until
he steps up his level of competition to the point where his athleticism and power aren't going to be able to make up for all the faults that he has. Right now, they've been able to bail him out just because of the level of competition he's fought. Spielko definitely was a step up, so you saw a completely different fight, but his power was still able to bail him out. And Spielko's decision to kind of go hog wild, like you were saying earlier on, right? He kind of let his guard down, started fighting in a more aggressive manner, got a little reckless. That wasn't anything that Wilder was doing, you know what I mean? But Wilder was able to capitalize on that, so that does show, you know, something. The only hope that I would have for Wilder would be that he trains like Floyd Mayweather trains, if he does. Like, if he trains like Floyd Mayweather trains, maybe he can hang around a lot longer than most of us expect. What do you guys have for, like, a Wilder-Fury fight at this point? Because we've seen Fury in with somebody who's just as big as him. You know, so the size advantage kind of thing was negated in the Klitschko fight. But Klitschko didn't throw any punches, so it made it a little bit easy for Fury. Wilder's going to at least throw some punches and, you know, try to win the fight. So what do you guys have for that fight?
Well, before I answer that question, I just wanted to point something out with Wilder's age. And that's that, you know, if Wilder was 26 years old, this wouldn't be a problem at all. We'd actually be, I would feel fine with Wilder's development so far. I'd say he's got a lot of time to go. He can fight a few more Spilka-level guys to really start to develop himself. But at 30 years old, it's a little late for that. Holding a title, it makes it a little harder to justify taking time to learn. I think Wilder is already in his prime, and he's closer to the end of the prime than he is to the beginning. And this is troubling, and it's one of the things that I had a real fear with when it came to Leo Santa Cruz, because I saw the direction his career was going. Keith Thurman's another one. And they have to start matching him properly and giving him these tough fights before his development gets arrested. Santa Cruz looks like he's going to be fine. It remains to be seen with Thurman. But Wilder, I think, is going in the opposite direction. Now, as for Wilder Fury, I'm pretty sure Simon's going to agree with me. I don't foresee any way that Fury loses that fight. Unless Wilder can do what he did last night and just find that punch, there's no way he can outbox Fury. Fury thinks in boxing. Wilder does not. Fury's completely natural in the ring. His movement and his footwork for a guy that's 6'10" and isn't in real proper shape is astounding. There's no way that Deontay Wilder beats Fury if it's not by knockout. Go ahead, Simon.
Yeah, I totally agree, so I don't really need to talk too much on that. I think that you've summed it up the way that I would, in that if it goes to the judges, it's Fury's every day, 100 times out of 100. But, you know, Wilder does have that power to make things interesting. Fury's had problems where he's been clipped before, and obviously he's recovered fine from those clips, but it does still show that he's not immortal. You know, he is there to be hit, and, you know, people can find him and they can hurt him. So it's not out of the question, but you do sense that a knockout's what would be needed. One thing I thought was interesting, though, from last night is that Wilder mentioned that he'd given himself a 10-year time limit to be in boxing, which would take him, basically he's got another 2.5 years on his time limit as he turned pro, sort of the back end of 2008. And with that in mind, that doesn't seem unrealistic at all, because if you think the next fight he's going to have is going to be Charles Martin, there's no way that it's not going to be. He's then going to need to face somebody, because, I mean, let's map this out. So he fights Charles Martin and takes another belt. He then doesn't have to capitulate to his mandatory, because if the WBC want to strip him, he's got his other title, so he's still a world titleist. You know, most fans aren't going to tell the difference. It's a belt that says he's the world champion, so he gets the leverage back then. And at that point, he can take a bit more of a voluntary, you know, he can sort of map himself out. But he is eventually going to clash with the most profitable fighter, whether that be Fury, Klitschko, Anthony Joshua, by this point in time, because this could be, you know, 18 months down the road, you don't know, and he's bringing in big money already. So I think that at that point is where he comes unstuck, and then he'll have one or two fights fighting at sort of intercontinental level against compelling opponents within the US, and then call it a day. So I think he may have hit the nail exactly on the head with how long he's going to be in the game.
How interesting now is the heavyweight division, because we have Wilder, and for whatever it's worth, okay, Wilder's entertaining at the very least, in and out of the ring. A little cringy sometimes, but he's entertaining. We have Anthony Joshua. We have Luis Ortiz, the southpaw big hitter. I guess it's worth mentioning Charles Martin, but like only as to. Like he's going to he's like somebody. He's somebody's
he's
opponent
the
right now.
Ball of the heavyweight division. He's a complete monster.
And by that you mean he's the heaviest?
Glance,
sure.
The mere glance of his glove, you know, breaks knees. It's just
breaks knees.
It's interesting. I find that 3 or 4 months ago, Vladimir Klitschko was reigning against a dead, weak era of heavyweight boxing. And within the space of 10 to 12 weeks, we've got about 15 viable world-level fighters. It's so weird. They've just appeared out of nowhere.
Well, I think that the easy answer for that is that Klitschko was seen at that point as being a huge, huge, like there was a huge gap between him and everyone else as far as talent goes. And I always said, if you take Klitschko out the picture,
he was mediocre and everyone else was garbage.
Yeah, heavyweight is cool. If you took Klitschko out, now you're talking, Simon, I know what you're doing. You're trying to talk to the Mike Tyson fans. Stop it. But at the point, there was a big gap between Klitschko and everyone else. And I literally would always say the heavyweight division is not dead. It's just that if you take Klitschko out of the picture, it's actually really entertaining. It's really interesting. Like Povetkin could beat everybody, but you know, Fury, who was top 10 at the time, is interesting. There's all these guys that could beat each other. And if Klitschko was taken out of the picture, as he now is, it becomes equalized, and you have about 8 people who are roughly around the same level that you wouldn't be shocked if they were to beat the other guys. And that's where the heavyweight division is right now, because Klitschko's been brought down. And the division is fascinating. I haven't been this interested in the heavyweight division ever, actually. So, and I'm not the biggest fan of heavyweights. And then let's just jump on to Charles Martin versus Vyacheslav Glaskov, which was a very, 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 very disappointing night for Kathy Duva, as Glaskov, who entered and should have won. I foresee going into this fight, I did not think Martin had a chance. I just thought he's not fast enough, and you saw it in the first round. He is slow. I just thought Glaskov should easily outbox him. Doesn't have much power, but he should outbox him, take this title. Can't see Martin really boxing with him after six rounds due to lack of stamina. And then what happens is Glaskov, according to Pauly Malignaggi, tears his right ACL. Done. And he's going to be out of action for about a year now. Were you guys... go ahead.
I tend to go more with Charles Martin's take on the fight, which was, you know, Martin is just so powerful. He broke the knee of Glaskov.
Maybe. I disagree, though. And why I disagree is because I think logically. And I do think that part of the injury that Glaskov suffered was due to a right hand that Martin landed. Or no, it was a left hand. He's a southpaw. He did hit him with a left hand. He did. And Glaskov staggered back a little weird. And at that point, I thought there's something off about Glaskov. And then I could tell as soon as he came out the next round, there was something off about him. And then before you know it, he's on the floor grabbing his knee. The fight is over.
New heavyweight champion.
A new heavyweight champion. And Jesus, what is there to say about Charles Martin? Like, does, you know, I have a conspiracy theory that is shared by many people, and that is that the IBF loves Matchroom. And you know who is promoted by Matchroom? Anthony Joshua. And you know who's looking for a heavyweight title? Anthony Joshua. Is it?
Who died? Steer clear of Martin.
You don't think that there's the possibility that we see Anthony Joshua AJ coming to America, fighting on PBC, and losing to Charles Martin by freak knee injury?
I mean, I think Martin's got to be the pawn that they position for Wilder, surely. That's got to feed the Wilder machine. I mentioned earlier how I figure that if he can take that belt and unify it, because they'll let him get away with not doing his mandatory if he's doing a unification, and then if he's got both, it gives him leverage to say, fine, strip me, I'll keep the other one.
So the biggest loser here is obviously poor Alexander Povetkin.
Ugh.
Because this guy's legitimately talented, actually has some good wins, deserves another shot at the title.
Kind of on the outside of everything at this point.
He even flew to America to watch the fight last night, just hoping, like the girl who dresses up nice and comes to the dance and just sits there and nobody asks her to dance.
I didn't even really see him in the coverage either.
Well,
Fury was the girl in the short skirt who got into the ring after the fight.
Who was on coke or something.
Who stole the fight. Yeah, he stole the fight, honestly. And now Wilder Spiegel, that was a fun fight, but Fury was the one, that Fury is what I'll remember. That was like an amazing performance of him after in that post fight where he did a little opening monologue that was like a rhyming couplet. It was so great.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think the most entertaining part was Evander Holyfield.
Not Tyson?
You know how I feel about this.
No, but I felt like Fury getting in there and like just going, you know, batshit crazy was awesome. It was what heavyweight boxing needs. It was perfect.
That's what boxing
but
needs.
But isn't he like relegated to having to fight Klitschko again, though?
No, that's already been agreed on. So he's fighting.
Yeah, that's what I said. So
now if Fury loses. Oh my God.
So, but hold on. So his whole like shtick, I'm going to fight you, Wilder, is all kind of BS because he kind of has his own thing going on already that he has to that he has to clear up before he could fight Wilder.
You're going to piss off
They're letting it marinate, and beyond that, it's an insurance policy that if things do go south with the rematch against Vlad, he gets a good shot at a title in a market that he's already warmed up.
And that was, you know, great promotion for a fight. Just letting, I mean, just, I was telling, I think I told Denius yesterday, but that whole fight with Spielka and then the afterwards with Fury and Wilder, that was already more entertaining than the lead up and fight between Fury and Klitschko. Like, you can't not put these two guys together. Yeah. It's just going to work.
Klitschko did at one point wear like a full Batman get up and then push over the Joker during
a
press
cringy.
Conference.
It was cringy. This is like
cringy. You know what was cringy?
They don't need to do that. They let them be themselves. Don't dress up in costumes. Let them talk. That's all we need them to do. Just talk to each other.
I think he was being himself. I mean, deep
you don't
down,
think
he
yeah,
is Batman.
You don't think, Right. You don't think he decided to do that on his own?
No, I mean, he did decide to do that on his own. But see, I'm just not quite sure because, you know, sometimes he's like very religious. Manny Pacquiao would be proud of Tyson Fury on Twitter, and then other times he's not. But we're like way off course here, and we have
just
to.
Just one other
we
point.
Have to.
One other point.
Go
one
ahead.
Other point my wife wanted to make was that at no point ever should the thinner end of a man's tie be lower than the thicker end. And that was Fury all the way.
Well, that is Fury all the way. But noted, all the male listeners, I'm sure, which is probably all of them, thank your wife for that bit of fashion advice. Now, Simon's dying to talk about David Haye versus Mark DeMori. So go ahead, Simon. What do you got to say? Were you impressed with Dave TV? Were you impressed with the quick knockout by David Haye? David Haye's physique, did you want to talk about? Go on.
I don't know. There's a lot to look at, isn't there? I mean, first off, you got what you paid for.
Was there free testing TV, for so. That fight?
I don't reckon. But I think that it came quicker than I expected it to go a few rounds because I thought that with Haye being out of action for so long, you just thought even if he sensed he could get him out of there quick, why would he do that? Why wouldn't he make it last a little bit? You know, he carried Audley Harrison into the third, I think it was. So, you know, I thought he'd show the same courtesy, but, you know, obviously that wasn't meant to be. Saw you know, the moment and took it. And, you know, he looked swift and he looked accurate and he didn't look too dissimilar from, you know, the Haye we saw years back. So
getting hurt by Derek Chisora.
He is definitely in the mix again. I think it's clear that he wants to go towards Anthony
Joshua. Really? He's in the mix again?
I think so. I think that he's going to talk himself into a big fight with Anthony Joshua, and then how he does there will define where he goes from there.
You mean he'll fake an injury with Anthony Joshua?
I don't think so, because he's not. He needs to you know, get paid and be in fights. He can't perpetually be injured at this late stage in his rebooted career. People won't be
sure?
patient enough. Yeah, I don't
Haye
think
TV
so.
Haye TV is gonna take off.
There were rumors going around as well about Dave saying that they needed the fight to go a certain number of rounds so they could get some adverts in, and it seemed credible enough that various betting sites stopped, you know, offering round betting on it leading up to the event. There was some weird, and obviously, if they had made that demand of Haye to let it go a few rounds, he didn't listen. So I wonder if he won't be back with them. But yeah, I mean, all the people out there in the scene, it's clear that he's seen how much money the pay-per-view with Dillian White did in December and thought, I want to get in on that, because with Dillian White as a kind of unknown quantity to the public, you can only imagine how well the pay-per-view would go between, you know, the great new hope, Anthony Joshua, and then our last legendary heavyweight in David Haye. So you know, that's going to be a big earner. So I think he's definitely relevant to the scene. I think we can definitely expect Anthony Joshua versus David Haye sometime later on this year.
And that's the crucial thing here, is that Haye isn't back in the mix. And the reason why he is he's got a name. He has a name. And if you disagree with that, look at the crowd last night. They said that they had sold it out or whatever they had done at the O2 Arena. And you can tell by the crowd sound that it was packed.
Mm.
And Haye versus Joshua makes sense. Not quite yet, though. They need to let it marinate.
And I know. I think later this year, November, December pay-per-view, that'll be. And if you saw that Dillian White had a little pockets of success in the fight, a very smart... Haye is a smart fighter, and I don't think that he's got the physical attributes to win the fight, but I think he definitely has the experience and the IQ to do stuff. So if AJ doesn't approach it smartly and doesn't stick to his boxing, then, you know, I wouldn't give Haye no hope in this fight. I think that he'd be extremely live.
So you think Haye is a live dog in the fight if they let the fight marinate long enough?
No, I think it would be if they did it tomorrow, and I think he will be when they do it in November, December this year.
You really buy into Haye's power at heavyweight?
I mean, it's the myth, isn't it? It's the big myth of power. It's the timing and it's the accuracy, and he's got both. And, you know, he was able to wobble Valuev, who was an absolute behemoth who'd never had trouble ever. So, yeah, I do think that if he catches AJ with the right shot, he may be able to spell disaster.
There's no way that happens.
I still have AJ as a big favorite in that matchup when it takes place. However, I think that, hey, I don't know, I'll be looking closely at the odds of that fight.
All right, well, let's preview some fights for next week, and then we'll jump on the news. First up, and I'm just going to glance over. I accidentally tried to talk like you, Simon. Let's glance over some fights. First, we have Jamal James fighting on Tuesday at the Nokia Theater. I don't know if we're still calling it the Nokia Theater. On PBC FS1. This is a good fight. Jamal James is a 6'2" welterweight. He's interesting to watch, and they're stepping him up right now. So if you want to look at who the next welterweight contenders are going to be in the future, tune in Tuesday because Jamal James is one of them. I'm not saying he's going to be good or not.
6'2" welterweight?
Yep. I'm not saying he's good or bad. I'm just saying check him out because you want to know who, you know, Sean Porter's fighting after he loses to Keith Thurman. Well, this is kind of like one of those guys you can look at. All right. Jose Zepeda returns this weekend. And if you... like, if you haven't been following Jose Zepeda, poor luck for this guy. This is this lightweight. Zepeda, he got the shoulder injury versus Terry Flanagan and lost his chance at the lightweight title. I'm sure everyone remembers that. Then he has a no contest in his next fight. First round, cut opens up. They have to stop it. Now he's back. Pretty easy fight for him. Adrian Estrella is a knockout artist prospect that's also going to be fighting this week. Check him out. And then also, we were talking about the heavyweight division earlier and how the heavyweight division is more exciting right now than it's ever been. And Joseph Parker's fighting again this weekend. Now, it's obviously not a very difficult fight that he's going to be in, but it's a worthwhile fight to mention because Joseph Parker is definitely one of the prospects coming out that is going to be very good as a heavyweight.
Mm. And now, a win in that fight probably puts him in the top 10 heavyweight on BoxRec at least.
Yeah, probably. And it's it's time. It's time for Parker to fight somebody from the range of 5 to 15.
I didn't know he was that ready. Okay.
Yeah, he slipped into 11 already, and the win next weekend, which you sense is coming, will propel him to somewhere up there.
All right.
Has he been tested at all?
Not in any significant way, but
that's what I didn't think. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no.
That's quite a high rating for somebody who hasn't been tested. But go ahead. We can move on.
Yeah, no. Parker's had a couple of tests that you could say at least let you know he's ready for contender level, but not necessarily that this dude is going to win a world title.
So he's had, 17 odd fights? How many of them have had not a winning record? So either an even record or a losing record?
Do you know the answer?
No, let me have a look quick.
Okay.
Hang on. If him and Ali fought 100 times, how many times would he win?
It's two. It's only twice he's fought anyone with a losing record. Yeah,
he'd only lose two times.
That's what I thought. 15 of his fights have been against people with winning records.
Which is good. Except if the opponent is like 60 and 20.
There's a 14 and 2, 42 and 5, 25 and 3. So they're not that out there.
Yeah, so basically, Parker's ready to challenge somebody who's ranked. Big puncher, too. I like Parker. I think he's good. The thing that's going to stop him and hold him back is his size. I think he's a little small for the modern heavyweight division.
He's only
6'4". And AJ. Yeah, and AJ. Like, there's another, really exciting UK heavyweight prospect, right? That's got to kind of pull away from him a little bit.
Yeah, and the fact that he's fought most of his career down in Australia and New Zealand and down there, so he hasn't gotten much recognition. But it's going to come this year. I think this year Parker really emerges. So now let's talk about Danny Garcia versus Robert Guerrero.
This is a fight that they've let marinate just long enough.
Yeah? Yeah, say more. Oh, wait, you're being sarcastic. Okay.
Yes.
Look, Danny Garcia's second fight at welterweight. His first fight was Paulie Malignaggi, which I had Garcia winning by split decision. And now he's going to fight Robert Guerrero, who almost lost to Aaron Martinez in his last fight. Basically, this is Guerrero's last payday. That's what this fight is. It's a goodbye to Robert Guerrero at the world level and contender level. And it's like, here's your payday, and we'll be done with you.
It's also another chapter in the story of Garcia slipping some titles at Welter, because he's going to be picking up a vacant, isn't he?
Oh, my God. Well, it's a good thing that we don't recognize titles, but, you know, the fact that the WBC has made this for their vacant welterweight title.
The WBC?
Yeah,
WBC. So he's currently the WBA super, and this is going to have him steal the WBC world title. You know what I mean? He's going to have half of the big four doing anything at the division.
This must be, though, the only fight at welterweight in the next coming 6 months that has a Mexican in it. Because why else would the WBC put their vacant title up? I mean, throwing the title out, okay? Throwing the title out. Where do we place Garcia in the welterweight picture right now? I mean, he's obviously very good. We know Garcia's talented.
Yeah, I'm a fanboy, so I rank him highly. I think there's a few people that would be in extremely interesting fights with him. But if you think Thurman deals with him easily, for example, I think you've probably either overestimated Thurman or underestimated Garcia. I think that's the sort of level he's at.
How do you feel about... obviously... Jason left the podcast. He's like, you know what?
He's just like, no, fuck this.
What about
if Garcia? You guys rate Garcia that high, I'm out of here. No,
Garcia's rated by the TBRB at 8 in the welterweight division. But check this out. Just above Guerrero and Martinez. Guerrero and Martinez are 9 and 10.
Guerrero is slowly walking his way down the rankings. Like, it takes time to fall out of the rankings. Look at Manny Pacquiao's career. It doesn't just happen overnight.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
You slowly go down. You know? And that's same thing with Guerrero. Garcia struggled with Peterson. He struggles with movers. Guerrero is going to make him look fantastic. Will be my assessment going into this fight, is that Guerrero is the perfect come forward, stay still fighter that is going to allow Garcia to really utilize his best skill set and just left hook him until he's done.
What do you guys think? So the TBRB has Pacquiao 1, Bradley 2, Kell Brook 3. Amir Khan 4, Thurman 5, Porter 6, Saddam Ali 7, and then Danny Garcia at number 8. What do you guys think of Khan's high ranking in the division right now versus where Garcia's at?
And Saddam Ali, as much as I love him, hasn't proved a lot in terms of being a top 5 or, you know, up there fighter just yet. So I think that is a bit wonky.
Yeah, the rankings are weird for the welterweight here. How do you guys feel about Garcia versus Kell Brook? Like, who wins that fight? I think I've put Simon in a really tough spot as a fan of both fighters. He's really struggling right now. So, Jason, please answer for Simon.
Tough fight. I would go probably with... that's tough. That's a really great fight to want to see. Post-injury, Kell Brook, I seriously am not, like, high on him. I haven't seen enough out of him to really wow me. But Garcia, I don't know. That's a good fight. Probably edge Brook, though. Brook's bigger.
Is he?
He's Kell Brook?
Yeah.
And Garcia?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not looking at any stats, but I definitely think he is. He's been fighting at welterweight longer. We could check it out. He seems bigger in my opinion, at least.
He's not. They're the same size.
They're the exact same size.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Brooks much more comfortable at 147 because he's fought there for longer. But Garcia is the same size.
Reach wise,
let me see. So Garcia's got 68.5-inch reach. Kell Brook has 69-inch reach.
Yeah, like I said, he's bigger.
he's got like a slight fingertip more.
Yeah, right. Armpit to the end of the finger, or whatever they do. That's a really tough. That's a really tough fight to call.
I feel it's like I'd need to watch a few of their recent fights in isolation, back to back, and then with an answer.
Garcia looks so bad against movers. He really does. He looked bad against Peterson. He looked bad against Herrera. He looked bad against Judah in the last, you know, four rounds of that fight. When somebody's mobile, Garcia looks bad.
Let me make an argument for Garcia, though.
If Brook could be mobile in that fight and keep him at bay, it could be like an easy win.
So the argument is that I'm going to have is like, that's fine. And you're absolutely right with what you said. Garcia struggles, but he's done it so much and he always wins. I'm starting to think that that's just Garcia and that's what we should accept from him. That's just the way he's going to fight. Pacquiao fights a certain way with counterpunchers and he does well with them. I mean, he's beat Marquez a few times. And it's really just that's the way Pacquiao fights when he's faced with a counterpuncher, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's any worse or not that good of a fighter. It's just styles make fights and that one is rough for him. And I think if we isolate that out, Garcia is actually very skilled and he somehow figures out a way to deal with these guys who are counterpunchers. Or not counterpunchers, that's Pacquiao. Movers.
I wouldn't go as far as to say that he finds a way to deal with them because most of them are controversial decisions. So I think you going out there and saying he finds a way to deal with them is a little misleading, whereas he gets a judge's decision.
Right, but we have to look at the end result. That's and not the end result says win.
I think given how risky it is for both teams, if it were to happen, they'd let it marinate for quite a while. It's not a fight that either team will be like hunting for.
Yeah, Brook really does need to establish himself here in America before he starts. The only viable fight for Kell Brook right now that is a big fight, I'm sorry, Kell Brook fans, is Amir Khan. And that's only because Amir Khan
will bring the excitement. Talking about Brook Garcia, I want to see Brook Khan just so Khan could finally get beat by him.
But, I mean, he's going to get beat. But, obviously, neither guy's fighting this weekend is Danny Garcia. But thank you, Danny Garcia, for being a launching board for us to talk about this. But Brook really needs to get his name out there. And maybe the win over Khan does it. I don't know that that moves anything here in America. I think Brook needs another win over here in America. I think it's going to take two or three, actually, for Brook. He's not very charismatic.
How about this? If Porter wins in March and then rematches Brook, who does it again, does that do it?
The problem is maybe the timing with Brook. Brook started his career in America by, you know, overcoming Sean Porter when Porter was on this, you know, destructive tear. Right, and then he totally neutralized him, and then he was gone, and he was disappeared, and he fell out of the consciousness. That's seriously.
That's that part Andre of Ward promotion.
You know, to the exactly again on that Rock Nation shit. But he completely left the limelight because he started to build momentum after that fight because all of America was like, Porter's got this on lock. And then it was like, oh wow, Porter's super one-dimensional and can't adjust, and Brook did a good job of using his reach and, you know, jabbing him, you know what I mean? Like, he really had a lot of momentum at that time and then gone, you know. So
the Vladimir Klitschko approach of show up, take the belts, leave,
right?
Yeah, but at least Klitschko would go off and do some other stuff around the world. You know, Brook was literally just beat up a couple of random dudes
every time he fought outside of the U.S. That's the word on the street.
If you could, like, you could not go to the StubHub Center at a fight or wherever and pick out five boxing fans and ask them, who is JoJo Dan? And they would know.
Yeah.
Or who is Frankie Gavin? They say, huh? You mean Frankie Gomez? The Pitbull? I don't know who you're talking about then.
No, you are right.
So I do, you know, I do think he would need to really establish himself a lot more in the United States. And the worst part of it is he was already there. You know what I mean? Like, he already dipped his toe in the U.S. and made an incredibly impressive performance. And then just unfortunately wasn't able to capitalize on it.
All right, guys, let's move on to the next fight. And that is...
But come on, Danny Garcia versus Robert Guerrero? Ugh.
Hey, at least we know this is going to be a fun fight. At least it's going to be a fun fight. As long as it lasts.
Yeah, they're both going to get hit in the face a lot because they're both very stationary.
Yeah, if you're implying that Guerrero's going to land clean on Garcia, you got another thing coming.
We'll see. He'll get in his licks. Not as many as Garcia will, but he'll get them in.
I don't know. you Aaron obviously Martinez. Did not watch the Guerrero-Martinez fight. Guerrero's offense at this point in his career is not very good, and he's not landing flush very much on Danny Garcia. So now, Sammy Vasquez is going to be on the undercard. If you don't know who Sammy Vasquez is, he's done an AMA on Reddit Boxing, so you should go check that out. But for two, Sammy Vasquez is a welterweight prospect. He used to be in the military. He's a good prospect. I wouldn't rank him at the elite level. And his offense is good. His power is good. Just the defense is not there. He's a little reckless at times. He gets caught while he's throwing sometimes. When he does offense, he commits fully. And obviously, that's not very good for a prospect. You want to see them have some responsibility on defense. And he's going to be fighting Aaron Martinez, who Martinez had one of the best years of last year. Should have been up for, like, Fighter of the Year, like, honorable mention. Because he pretty much upsets Robert Guerrero. He should have won that fight. Okay, drop Guerrero, should have beat him. Then he goes off and he beats Devin Alexander on ESPN in one of the most improbable upsets of the year, because that seemed like a style matchup where no matter what Martinez did, he was always going to get outboxed by Alexander. So now these two are fighting. It's a great fight for Vasquez to test, you know, at what level he's at and where he's ready to go next. And at the same time, if Martinez wins, upsetting like probably a four-star prospect like Vasquez, this dude has had one of the greatest career renaissances we've probably ever seen. So how excited are you guys for this fight? Welterweight fight.
No, that's a great – yeah, that's a great way to phrase it. It really is. When you take on all of those elements at once, it makes it an extremely compelling fight.
No, and Vasquez – He struggled a little bit in his last fight too, so he's not coming in looking like he's unstoppable. He had some trouble with Omotoso. Now, obviously, Omotoso's chin is legendary. Vasquez hit him over and over again, couldn't do it. And then actually, that wasn't his last fight. That was the last fight back in June. His last fight was in September, and Vasquez did a typical Vasquez where he just beat up some guy. But both guys were decent opponents. And, I'm hoping that this is going to be an entertaining fight. Martinez, his style is pretty brute. It's like, you know what you're expecting. He's going to come in, he's going to fight. Guerrero wasn't ready for a fight like that. Martinez took it to Guerrero, and Guerrero, like, for once, Guerrero got pressure that he couldn't handle. Because if you remember when he fought Andre Berto, Guerrero brought the pressure, and Berto didn't know what to do. And it was, the tables were turned perfectly when he fought Martinez. So I hope that happens. And I really want to see Vasquez overcome it. I really want to see Vasquez beat Martinez and do it convincingly. You know, no early one-punch knockout. I want to see Vasquez come out and show he can box and set up his power. Because he's a fascinating welterweight. And there's a lot of talk right now about him and Spence doing a prospect versus prospect. Someone's always got to go type of fight. And for the record, though, Spence is a 5-star prospect. Vasquez is a 4-star prospect. That kind of tells you how that fight's going to go, regardless of the result this weekend. So, Simon, what's your thoughts on this fight?
My primary concern is how to watch it. I'm not sure who's picking it up, UK side.
Well, that's the problem. You might have to VPN this.
I may have to. But no, it looks interesting enough. I don't have a strong opinion of it, but I'll catch it for sure.
Is it because this is an American domestic scene fight?
It's difficult.
We know how you
to
feel
follow.
About it.
How do I feel about it?
It's American, so you don't care.
I care deeply about many American fights, but the domestic scene is sometimes tough to follow.
Simon
where it's
doesn't
not well
care
broadcasted.
About American people.
Shut up.
All of America.
All right, so what about this one? Heavyweight fight, also on the undercard. Domino Brazil versus Amir Mansour. This is going to be a good one. Really good one. Mansour can fight. He can't box very well. I mean, he can box, but like he ain't Vladimir Klitschko. He's not Tyson Fury.
we
can
saw
fight,
the Cassie
though.
Fight, so we got that framework.
And then Brazil, like we know what Brazil brings to the table. It's not very fast. It's not very, you know, polished. But it's effective to whatever extent it is. So I think someone's getting knocked out here. It's gonna be a fun fight.
I'm not sure if I agree with you on that one, because it's only scheduled to go 10, and I think that it could go 10.
I don't think either guy can go 10.
You don't think?
No.
We'll see on that one.
Too many openings.
I agree, but I don't think there'll be too many people capitalizing on those openings. I tell you what, I'll stick my neck out and say this one goes the distance, and we'll see what happens next week when we catch up again.
Well, if it does, I'm gonna be mad at you. I'm gonna be mad at the fighters, because I don't want this one to go the distance. If this goes the distance, it's not gonna be entertaining.
Hashtag chocolate brownie.
Okay. All right. So now, as exciting as this card is, and this weekend coming up is gonna be packed of boxing. If you look online at PBC's website, if you look at HBO, if you look at Showtime, even Sky Sports, you'll notice that there's not many fights that have been signed. There's not much to look forward to in the first quarter of 2016. And I wanted to ask you guys for your opinion of whether or not, or how concerning this is, that we don't seem to have much nailed down in the first quarter. Meanwhile, we're midway, on the other end of the midway point of January.
I think that the reason for that is that there's a lot in transit at the minute in the sport. You've got some really dominant and established draws in the division being either retired, beaten, pushed aside. And so it's not quite clear to everyone who holds the cards anymore. And so there's some other fights that are happening soonish that will help start to paint a picture of who's really got the leverage. But I think that we're in flux at the minute, and no one's quite sure what to make of it in terms of, you know, is it time to capitalize? Is it time to sit back and take a touch-up fight, to stay busy fight? You know, I think that there's a lot of confusion on who the draws are right now and who's hot.
Kell Brook's first fight was against a guy that was 31, 189, and 10, and it went six rounds.
Okay.
Six-round decision.
So we're back on Kell Brook. That's pretty typical for a British prospect, though. There's a lot of career journeymen out there who, you know, they've specialized in not getting knocked out. You don't lose 139 times and get knocked out half of the time, because, you know, then you'd be like Brian Hoyer in a playoff game. So
there you go.
So
Makes sense.
I think that's one of those things where, yeah, Brook did make his debut against a guy like that. But look, those kind of fights test a guy. Those guys are experienced. He's been in the ring over 100 times. This guy knows how to box. He knows how to fight. And you
over
ain't
200 times. Yeah.
Well, I mean, who's counting at that point? You think he remembers?
Boxer.
So anyway, back to the first quarter. And Brook plays a role here, because it's like, when are you fighting? Kel? When are you fighting?
I get things are in flux, but there's plenty of fights that could be made, and it's really, you know, it feels like maybe the brakes are being pumped a little bit. How much of Al Haymon's massive war chest has he run through? You know, does that playing a role in why we're not seeing as many fights?
This is on a world level, and it's bigger than Haymon. I mean, it's... I think you're right. There are lots of really compelling fights to be made, but
it's the perfect time for Haymon to step up and get the audience, because nobody else is doing anything. That's what I didn't understand. I saw this gap in fights being made as the perfect time for PBC to start making fights. They're going to have a captive audience. People are demanding and craving boxing at this point because there's just been so little on. Now is the time to capitalize.
No, I can see that, but I feel that they're not exactly sure of what the route looks like, and because of things being in transit, as I'd mentioned earlier, I think maybe those conversations are happening, but offers that, you know, they think it's a sensible offer, the opposite team think it's a really, you know, insulting or indelicate offer, and I think that no one quite knows their worth or their value or their ranking in the scheme of things, where there's been so many big people pushed out of the picture for one reason or another.
Do you think Mayweather's retirement Lovkin has some bearing on this?
Absolutely. He's one of the flagship people. You know how wonky the rankings were at welter? I think that he's directly the result of that, because so many people capitulated to help Pacquiao Mayweather become the event it was, that there's all sorts of legacy ranking like oddities that exist still, that has been passed on, where it's like the transitive properties of like, oh, well, how did this person do against Mayweather or Pacquiao? And that would, you know, skew their ranking either up or down in the division. So I think that, you know, with Klitschko being put aside, you know, that has a big issue. With Ward's move to light heavy, you know, there's just so many different moving pieces, and it's not clear. I think the only things that are certain is that Golovkin's a wrecking machine, and the
and Adonis Stevenson is evil.
Frampton Quigg's going to be exciting. Like, I feel that there's less certainty.
Well, I think when it comes to Mayweather's role here, I think back last year and the years prior, basically the boxing world revolved around Mayweather, in that when Mayweather made his decision for what he was going to do, then all the chips started to fall into place. It's like, well, mm-hmm. I'm not getting Mayweather. Well, I'm going to do this and that and that. And that, and that yeah. has a trickle-down effect where it's, okay, well, so Amir Khan's not going to fight Mayweather, so we'll put him in with, I'm just going to, you know, throw something out there. We're going to put him with Danny Garcia. But now I my junior welterweight, who I was going to fight, that was going to fight Danny Garcia, is now going to fight this guy. I'm going to bring this guy up from lightweight, blah, blah, blah. And basically everything kind of fell in place after that, because, you know, that big payday would, you know, was not career altering, but it would make it could make or break your promotion. And now that there's no Mayweather, it's like, well, what ship is going to fall before everything falls into place?
We spoke in the past, and I called it the welterweight's gravitational pull, that all of the neighboring divisions would kind of be on notice for a Mayweather fight, and they'd make themselves available. And I think the reality is dawning now that they have to make themselves a draw in their own division by doing, you know, creating their own story and their own branding. They can't sit back and wait to win the Mayweather lottery anymore.
Yeah.
And right, but doesn't that make you think they should be fighting more often, though?
Of course. I think
to the point, it's kind
of, I think they're aware
the
of what needs to happen, but it's now what it looks like. Who do they get on the phone with? You know, who are they? Because everyone wants to start establishing their name, and no one wants to really start taking any risks, because the first person to take a risk and lose is out of the runnings.
Yeah, and the only guys right now, at least in that division area, that are actually on the path is Thurman and Porter. They're the only guys that seem to, at welterweight, to get, like, well, the only way to, like, actually get closer to that top position is if we fight each other. But it had an impact not only on that, but, like, if Mayweather chose to fight at 154, then the 154 fighters are like, okay, well, if he's going to fight at 154, my next fight must be one that is actually going to make me eligible to fight him, assuming he beats whoever. And it had this effect on the division around him, same if he went to welterweight. And right now, Manny Pacquiao just doesn't have that. The welterweights aren't getting in line and trying to take a tough fight. Brooks not saying, bring me Khan, bring me Garcia or whoever, so I can get this fight with Pacquiao. It's just the pool isn't there.
Yeah, because you're equally as likely to get it by waiting and being, you know, patient and taking stay busy fights.
Unless you're Amir Khan. That doesn't seem to be the route. So now, what's the appropriate split in this supposed Canelo versus Golovkin fight, assuming that it happens soon? Because Oscar thinks it's 90-10.
Yeah, people want to joke that 90-10 is insane, right? Uh-huh. Which, obviously, it's pushing the envelope far. But look at their respective pay-per-view numbers.
No, let's not, actually.
I mean, look at their respective pay-per-view numbers. And this is coming from a really big Golovkin fan.
Yep.
He didn't do really well as a pay-per-view draw. He'd be the perfect pay-per-view B-side to Canelo. But you have to look at Canelo's pay-per-view numbers in perspective as well, because he was fighting a Puerto Rican legend.
Yeah, so, absolute whereas, legend versus, you know, Golovkin, the best guy who would sign up to the fight.
Lemieux. Right. So there's something to be said there. I think Golovkin, even, you know, not fighting a star, but fighting, you know, like the number one, you know, in his division, tops could maybe sell 300,000 on his own. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's breaking 300,000 buys. Whereas Canelo, you know, he could fight and maybe, you know, make 500,000-750,000 on his own. It's really hard to say, but obviously 90-10 is you know, an exaggeration, but
I feel like I'm listening to Bob Arum justify why Martinez Chavez Jr. shouldn't take place, because it's not his job to be there and build Martinez's brand.
Well, he wanted the fight to marinate.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and there's a cause to say that this fight should marinate. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think Canelo should just man up and get his ass kicked by Golovkin, just like Chavez Jr. did by, you know, Martinez. There was some pride in that. And Canelo could learn from Chavez Jr., you know, and learn to gain some respect back, because he's losing a lot of respect.
Hold on.
By he was out there taking the fights like Lara and Trout when nobody wanted him to, you know, and now all of a sudden he's got another boogeyman to face and he's going the opposite direction.
No. See, the reason why Chavez Jr. fought Martinez is not because he had some balls, it's because he doesn't have self-awareness. He didn't realize that that was going to be a horrible fight for him, and that nobody would have really faulted him if he wouldn't have taken the fight. Because it's like, yeah, we know what's going to happen. Martinez is going to dance a circle around this guy and outclass him. Luckily, Chavez redeemed himself in the last 20 seconds of that fight, but, you know, too little, too late. I agree with you. And it's funny that even the Golovkin fans, they should realize this. Like, 90-10 is a little extreme, but the split's going to be something like that, just because of the numbers. Like, you always have to just look at the numbers. The numbers tell you the story. Golovkin's not a draw. His fight with Lemieux would have probably done better if it was on Bounce TV.
His fight with Lemieux would have done better if it was, like, in Montreal or something. You know what I mean? In Lemieux's hometown. And the real thing is, though, that you didn't address in your snarky comment there is that, you know, Canelo used to be this fighter that, give me the toughest challenge, put me in the ring with it. I don't care what you have to say, Oscar.
Wait, he's still like that.
Building establishment, but you know, once you're established, need that.
Exactly. Right, exactly. I agree with you. Now, say some bullshits, Angelo.
No, I was going to say, you could say he's still like that, though, because the Kirkland fight.
Oh, he is?
The Kirkland fight.
Fighting with Kirkland? Shut up. The most shot fighter in the world?
No, but you got to look at what people thought heading into that fight.
You are being abusive.
No, you don't.
You guys are using hindsight, which is fine. But prior to that, people thought that was a tough fight. People thought Angulo was also a tough fight.
You watched 124/7 on Kirkland, and you knew that he was an absolute shot fighter.
Yeah, but you know what? 24/7 aired a week before the fight, not 2 months when the fight was made.
But
the general consensus was also another tough fight for Canelo.
The general consensus was Pacquiao would be a tough fight for Mayweather. You know, you can't take the general consensus and whether that's an accurate reflection of reality.
Well, yeah, what's BS is Canelo used to take tough fights. He has a tough fight in front of him, and he's going the other way.
Well, I think they're letting the fight marinate, and I think they should. Do they want to make, because even just letting it go to September, that's a difference between, you know, probably 400,000 extra buys. Let these two go knock somebody out, build it up some more, and guess what? You do it in September, and that does 1 million instead of 800,000 buys.
What are we going to do? We're going to get Canelo Josecito Lopez too?
It's a good fight. It's probably more interesting than Golovkin Turiano Johnson.
BS, at least they're in the same weight class.
Because that fight is... I'm sorry, but Turiano Johnson is not lasting longer than a few rounds.
Yeah, at least Golovkin's fighting middleweights. At least he's fighting middleweights.
Well, I mean, who knows what division Canelo is? He's in this weird little bubble.
He's a middleweight.
He's a
middleweight. Bullshit. He's middleweight.
I don't know about that.
They're all in the record book. They're all middleweight fights.
Yeah, technically.
You want to talk about record books. You want to talk about what's on the record with Danny Garcia, how they're all W's. Now you don't want to talk about the record book? Come on, man. Stay on the same page.
I am on the same page. It's just I don't think that – see, Canelo should not be fighting at 155, and that simply speaks to the fact that he's a star and can demand that, which is ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
What should he be fighting at then?
154
or 160? Yeah. Well, 154. He can't make 154.
No, I think he's lazy. He's too busy eating all of Chepo Reynoso's good cooking, and we see it on the 24/7.
Man, it looks so good. It does look so good.
Cut down on that, and this guy makes 154. All right. So
But the takeaway for our listeners is that Canelo used to take tough fights. Now he doesn't.
We'll see. We will see. You know what the interesting thing, though, is that at his weight, whatever his weight is, that little in between, there isn't a tough fight.
Can't even say it.
There isn't a tough fight.
Rosado?
I just want to say, though, that last time we did an episode, you asked me, who's Canelo fighting? And I said Rosado.
Yeah. And I thought it was the most ridiculous fight.
Simon, stop. For you listeners, Simon's sending us messages, horrible puns in a chat. Stop it, Simon.
It's true. You know, he's going to keep letting these fights marinate for too long, and all of a sudden he's going to be Canelo instead of Canelo.
Speaking of marinating, you know who's going to end up the real loser here, sitting here marinating? Billy Joe Saunders. All that hard work, all those tough fights he took coming up. Guess what? You're going to be left with nobody because it seems like he's not getting the Golovkin fight.
Please. He's left with nobody because he wants to be left with nobody, just like Canelo. None of these fighters want Golovkin.
Well,
get out of here.
I mean, No, Jason, you're being rude to Billy Joe Saunders because you don't understand that he's promoted by Frank Warren. You seem to not be clear and on the ramifications of being promoted by Frank Warren. This isn't Saunders' fault. This is Frank Warren's fault. Go on, Simon.
Well, I was going to say, he's got the benefit of a built-in fight against Eubank. And, you know, it's not out of the question that, you know, Eubank and Saunders go off independently, fight on the world stage, both lose in embarrassing fashion, and then come back and have a big, big fight between themselves, you know, on pay-per-view still.
Yeah, that remains something that Eubank can do. But, I mean, Eubank has asked himself, do I want money or do I want a legacy here?
And they don't want money.
I mean, Saunders is kind of weird. I don't know, actually, if we could say what
we
would
want. He'll take a tough fight just like Canelo used to, but now he's a champion. Things change.
Saunders is a strange guy. He didn't have to take the kind of fights that he took as a prospect. And, you know, in taking them, which is a credit to him, he won those fights, unlike Frank Buglione. So now, off of that, there's a possibility of Juan Manuel Marquez coming back from the grave to fighting Miguel Cotto. Are you guys at all interested in this fight at this point? Or is this another Bernard Hopkins versus Roy Jones Jr. 2? Shout out to them who celebrated birthdays this week.
I don't think it's on that level, but it is definitely a final hurrah, isn't it?
Yeah, and with the rehydration clause, I must say, 150-something, 153, I think it was, which is essentially Marquez's way of making sure that this is equalized, because I don't think that Marquez can make 150-something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is going to be relevant to the scene still. It's not going to be one of those cases like where Roy Jones Jr. has found himself, where he's kind of like in active retirement still, but still fighting, or like, you know, I don't think it's going to be like a revival of like Mayorga. I think that it's going to be still a fight that exists in the world of boxing. It's not just going to be a kind of novelty throwback, but it is going to be a sort of final hurrah should it go ahead.
Yeah, because the last time we saw Cotto, he was so good.
I think the worst part about it is whoever wins is going to, you know, go on to pad the record of somebody else. Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, certainly if it's Marquez. Marquez doesn't seem the person to be interested in that sort of endeavor.
So you think Cotto would fight again?
No,
I think if
Cotto
won, he would. I think if either of them win, they'll fight again.
Interesting.
I would not advise that.
Neither would I, but I just think that feeling of coming off a win, and especially over the name factor involved, like I just beat Marquez or I just beat Cotto, that is enough to inspire a fighter to want to go out and make one last hurrah.
All right, so last thing we're going to discuss here. It was a really good thread that somebody made on Reddit Boxing. I think it was Tay2000. Good job for you. You made a thread that said, what are the top five scalps in boxing that somebody could conceivably get? And I thought that the question needed to be refined a little, because there are multiple ways that you can answer this question, and they'd all be correct. But for the sake of this, I wanted to discuss it with you guys. Who do you guys think are the top five scalps in boxing, where if you win, you gain the most as far as like becoming the draw in boxing, the premier draw in the sport? Who do you think the top five fighters are to beat that get you that position? So, Simon, why don't you go
first?
So,
I just want to get a little bit more clarity from you. When you say draw, are you talking about TV audience, or are we taking it into a sort of world where we're talking only to hardcore boxing fans and how much it means in their estimations?
TV, not the hardcore estimations.
Because in TV, David Haye's a massive scalp for AJ, but it's not. It won't impress boxing heads.
Well, here's what we'll do. So you have to be undefeated, and it's for TV. Meaning your star status in the sport. You get to command bigger audiences, more money. Like, who are those kinds of wins?
I think, what do you want to do? Do you want a list or do you want a top pick first?
Let's just throw them out there.
So my top is probably there. Golovkin.
I agree with you, Golovkin.
Really?
Think
come on, the guy, especially if you can knock him out.
No, but TV-wise, you think that... I think Canelo would be more the
not undefeated though. Not undefeated. We're only talking undefeated fighters.
Oh, undefeated. I'm sorry. Okay.
So yeah, I think Golovkin would be number one. I agree with you there.
He just doesn't have that big of a fan base. We know that because they don't buy his pay-per-views.
I think Golovkin gets a lot of publicity in like magazines as he's had articles in the New Yorker, Deadspin, Grantland. They've all done pieces on him, and I think if you beat Golovkin, that's one of those things that you don't know boxing, but you're gonna hear about it.
It is weird because a lot of the people I speak to know about Golovkin. They know he's a beast. They just don't watch his fights.
Because they know he's going to destroy somebody.
Well, I don't know their reasoning for not doing it. But yeah, they don't tune in. But they know who he is and who he's good. Like, put it this way. If Eubank got signed to fight Golovkin, people here that have never seen Golovkin would know it's an awesome challenge.
All right. Now, who else have we got?
For who?
For Golovkin. Eubank.
Oh, okay. I'm like, what?
No, they'd know that Eubank was really being put under the bus, like, you know, being asked a lot of.
Okay.
So who else do we got?
Tyson Fury.
Yeah, obviously the reigning heavyweight champion.
Without
a doubt. Tyson Fury. So we've got
Sergey Kovalev. What do you mean?
I don't know. We'll see.
He's got just as many fans as Golovkin.
He don't got the kind of articles that Golovkin has unless it's like in, you know, Murderers Weekly or something.
All right, fine. Andre Ward.
Again, I don't think that's Andre Ward's a big enough
low
draw.
Blow. That's a low blow at Rock Nation, at Jay-Z himself, at Beyonce, at Andre Ward.
Al Heyman, too.
Al Heyman.
Let's keep going. Roman Gonzalez.
I don't think Roman Gonzalez does anything. If Naoya Inoue beats
Roman Gonzalez.
But he's
been on HBO now. So he's an established star.
Who watched him? 150,000 buys, maybe, for that pay-per-view. Nobody knows who Roman Gonzalez is, unless you're a hardcore fan. I don't think so. I think Keith Thurman.
I think Keith Thurman more than Gonzalez, sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think Keith Thurman is probably top five.
Someone beating Gonzalez would make me more interested in them than, say, Porter beating Thurman.
Okay, but what about those people that don't really watch Golovkin? Let's talk about those people. Let's talk about those people. What do you think?
Well, those people are tough because there's such a limited number of people that they know, and most of them have losses. It's like, oh, if somebody goes and knocks out Pacquiao, like, yeah, that's going to, you know, make a big impact. But Crawford getting beat, although I think that would seriously shake things up, isn't really going to move the needle too much.
So, and that's why I think Thurman is. I think Thurman has more exposure than a guy like Crawford at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think they've done a good job with Crawford, but I think, you know...
Well, they Thurman haven't done too well lately. Way to go, Bob Arum. Your example, or not your example, your shining moment to crown a new king at welterweight. And what do? You make a trilogy.
Apparently it was Pacquiao's choice, not Arum's, if, you know...
Since when does Pacquiao call the shots? Since when does Pacquiao call the shots? This is new to me.
He did not decide.
All those years that Pacquiao was saying, it's up to my promoter. And now it's suddenly up to him?
Well, I think what it is like, oh, you could fight Crawford for $2 million or Bradley for $20 million. You make the decision. so he made the decision to fight Bradley.
I think Pacquiao probably gets paid the same. You know what I mean?
Like Aram engineered the situation. Aram engineered it so that Manny would pick Bradley for whatever reason.
Well, apparently, according to Aram, he's run the numbers. Let's go. Let's go with one more. Dare I say Guillermo Rigondeaux? Or does nobody know him?
Nobody knows him.
A lot of people know of him, and everybody's just like, and they know of him, and they know enough to be apathetic.
Yeah, I think anyone that's followed him, if they saw him lose, they'd wake up and pay attention.
So, like, if Frampton beats up on Rigondeaux, I think a lot of people would know and take notice of that, and of Frampton. Because I think Rigondeaux's numbers are so bad that you have to be intentionally not paying attention as a boxing fan to not watch Rigondeaux's fights. I think that's the point where he's at right now. No, I don't get it, Simon. Simon is sending more text messages in the chat. Apparently, we missed one of his puns. He said, wake up. Oh, I get it, because Rigondeaux puts people to sleep. No wonder why you said that.
Yeah. See, the jokes are there, you know.
Yeah, but I'm not good with puns at all.
His fights have been entertaining. He's been knocked down a couple times lately.
Who are we talking about?
Whenever you have to fight a vampire, things are interesting.
Things are certainly interesting. Let's get one more compelling silence.
Javier Fortuna.
Just a stab in the dark, huh? Stab in the dark.
Box rack random.
25-0, undefeated Dominican, super featherweight titleless. Yeah, that's who we're going with. Last fight on PBC, Brian Vasquez, unanimous decision.
No, Simon's got it locked and loaded. Let's hear it.
Yeah, let's hear you justify this one.
I think that the audience are aware of them as a credible entry. Yeah, absolutely. I just think that it would, I don't know, it would surprise people. Like,
someone beat Javier Fortuna. Wow. Said nobody ever.
Shut up. You're asking a really difficult question of me, because you're asking in a sort of Americentric sense on what would, because my answer would probably be someone like Callum Smith would absolutely make waves here if someone, had taken that scalp.
So you're accusing me of hating Britain?
No, I'm saying that it's just difficult for me to put myself in the shoes of a casual mainstream boxing viewer from America, because I'm not any of those things.
Well, I think it's Charles Martin. I think is.
You know, I was actually going to throw out Deontay Wilder. I actually legitimately think Wilder might be in this thing where, like,
Wilder's popular. He's popular. Here's a good one, Broner. But Broner's popular too.
Well, Broner's not undefeated.
Serious ratings.
I agree with you. Broner should be on the list, but not undefeated. Yeah. But I think Wilder, people take notice, and it's stupid because for us, we realize that's congratulations, you beat Deontay Wilder or Adrian Broner. But I think for the casual fan that doesn't know any better, that's a huge win. I'm watching the guy who beat Wilder. I think that's what happens in that case.
Mm. I'm inclined to agree.
I mean, what about John Cena?
I haven't got the trumpets.
Yeah.
I think that's how we'll end the podcast this week. We'll just play Cena's theme and that's it. Thank you for listening.
Does The Undertaker still fight?
He does, actually. He does.
He was out the same
a couple
guy?
Weeks ago. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
He was out about 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, he fought Charles Martin.
No. He sparred with Charles Martin to get him ready.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Yeah. Martin dropped him.
Happy birthday, Ann Wolf.
Let me finish the podcast, and then we could talk about fucking Bradley Skeet.
We're still on the podcast.
Well,
we haven't finished?
I haven't stopped the recording, but I just want to say that this week I have some surprises coming to Reddit Boxing. If you're a user there, I highly doubt that you listen and you're not a user, but a guide for the greatest fights of all time. I just want to let you know as a warning, it's a list categorized of all the greatest fights you can catch. It's great for if you're a beginner, if you're a new fan, and if you're not, and you're just looking for great fights to watch, there are over 80 fights that I've compiled for this thing, and it's growing. So
Tyson didn't fight 80 times.
True. So I had to do Tyson and Manny Pacquiao. So now I got 80 fights.
Now you got 80.
All right. So thank you for listening. Leave us a review.